All right. It is great to be here this morning. And if you will open up to Exodus chapter 15. Big surprise, right? We want to finish up chapter 15 this morning. Excuse me. I want to read verses 22 through 27, because that'll be our text here. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore it was named Marah. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There he made for them a statute and regulation, and there he tested them. And he said, "If you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer." Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water, 70 date palms, and they camped there beside the waters. All right, so this morning, we want to go through mainly 3 points. First off, a little bit earlier in Exodus 15, we want to compare the Song of Moses to Revelation 15, the Song of the Lamb. Secondly, I want to talk about the significance of this tree that's cast into the bitter waters. And lastly, to recognize and be thankful for the Elim spots in our lives. So let's connect this Song of Moses and the triumph celebration, if you will, the one described in Revelation 15:2. So if you want to keep your hand there on Exodus 15 and then open up to Revelation 15, you'll see that there is a lot of similarities there. In Revelation 15, I want to read verses 2, 3, and 4. "And I saw," this is the Apostle John speaking, "and I saw something like a sea of glass mixed with fire, and those who had been victorious over the beast and his image and the number of his name standing on the sea of glass, holding harps of God. And they sang the song of Moses, the bondservant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, 'Great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God, the Almighty. Righteous and true are your ways, King of the nations. Who will not fear, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy. For all the nations will come and worship before you, for your righteous acts have been revealed.'" All right, so what we see here is in Revelation 15, we've got the beast and his followers, and obviously those represent all the anti-Christian enemies of the Christ, the worldly secular powers, all of those that resist, oppose, and fight against the Christian. That's what we see in Revelation 15. And then we see God's judgment on them and that, you know, those worldly powers. And the imagery of that judgment that God has on them is shown in the 7 plagues that preceded that. So this vision of John, what we see is he talks about the multitudes on the sea of glass. And what it's doing is it's predicting the celebration of the church and her deliverance over all of her oppressors. So this sea of glass, one of the things to kind of picture here, it's got obvious reflection to back at the Red Sea. Now, picture the Red Sea. When it is standing up on both sides, it would be transparent. And what would be reflecting off of that would be the fiery cloud. So when you look at the in Revelation 2, it talks about the sea of glass mixed with fire. So that the imagery in both situations or both times would be similar. In the saved in Revelation, they're singing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. It's not as though there's two different songs, okay, but they're combined into one. So the meaning is that the church is going to be delivered in a very similar way that the Israelites were delivered back in Exodus, you know, the scene at the Red Sea, but a much greater deliverance. Just as Christ is much greater than Moses, the delivery, if you will, would be greater than that of the Israelites from Egypt at that time. So this old song is basically revised to express both of those victories, the lower back in Exodus and the higher, the one in Revelation, talking about the end time. And it's the song of the redeemed over the defeat of the anti-Christian powers, the worldly as well as the spiritual, over all the enemies. So now when we glance at those two songs, one in Exodus and one in Revelation, we note that the setting of both of those is the same. You know, the defeat of hostile, persecuting forces against us, just as the defeat of Pharaoh follows the Exodus, we've got the defeat of Christ's enemies in Revelation following his work on the cross. And we get that reference from 2 Thessalonians 1, where it says, "For after all, it is only just for God to repay with affliction those who afflict you." So that is in future for us right now, and that's what it's referring to in the book of Revelation. But the attributes of God in both of those situations are the same as well, and they're displayed in both of those deliverances. The work is similar, the attributes have to be similar as well. Those attributes being his power, his justice, his truth. And that's shown in Revelation 15, verse 3, when he says, "Great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God the Almighty." He talks about his power, talks about his works, that they are so great. And John brings that out. So the effects on the nation, you know, by this, by God's deliverance, is shown in verse 4 of Revelation, where he says, "Who will not fear, O Lord, and glorify your name? For all the nations will come and worship before you." Now remember in Exodus, where it talks that when the Israelites came across the, through the Red Sea, that all the nations around them melted. They all heard about what God had done. And that is reflected as well in Revelation 15:4, that all the nations will come and worship before you. Now the singers in both cases are the same as well, those that have been delivered. So now, after the deliverance, after the song, they move out from there. Moses had brought Israel through the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. So the main topics here that we're going to be speaking about is, or the main idea is that that the bitterness, okay, you've got the sweet first, but it's followed by bitterness at times. And so what we see here is we got these people singing these songs of triumph, praising God, you know, with timbrel and dance. And they're on the shore of the Red Sea here. The Israelites probably felt that they could sing and dance all the rest of the way to the Promised Land. You know, that everything is great. It's just, you know, they've got God that delivered them. They see all of the Egyptians had perished in the waters. So their, you know, their trials are at an end. Everything is going to be roses now. So it's probably with a little bit of sadness that they break camp on the far side of the Red Sea and start heading out. It would be very similar to what Peter said when he was on the Mount of Transfiguration. Lord, it is good for us to be here. Let's make three tabernacles. They probably had some of the same feelings, that it was great to be delivered. They're finally free. Their enemies have been destroyed, and they've got God on their side. But it wasn't quite done yet. There was still a little bit more. The old call comes from back in chapter 14, verse 15, speak to the children of Israel that they go forward. So God says, we're not going to stay here. We're not done yet. You have to move forward. So their celebration of triumph is going to be almost immediately followed by a little bit of hardship. So the Israelites are directed out to the wilderness. It's called the Wilderness of Shur. And it says they went 3 days without water. Now, God could have given them water if it was his will at the time, but they needed to taste a little bit of painfulness along the way forward. This is not an uncommon experience for them, wasn't it? And it's not really an uncommon experience for us either. You know, their early life, the Israelites, when they first went down to Egypt, it was nice. It was very sweet, very pleasant. But it was followed by bitterness. Every life has its, for us as well, has its dry, waterless stretches that sometimes may be compared to be this wilderness of Shur, a little bit of bitterness that is in our life. And I don't mean, when I say the word bitterness, I don't mean that we're bitter towards people, but bitterness in a sense of how it affects us, okay? So this times of, there are times of spiritual enjoyment, and sometimes they're followed by experiences in our life of trial, bitterness, okay? We're led through that wilderness of Shur. So, but God lets us taste that harshness of the trouble sometimes so that we could seek after him, so that we would seek after him. So they come to Marah, where the waters are bitter. And bitter, that means salty, bitter, okay? The water was not drinkable there. So you have to understand that was going to be an extremely disappointing time for them. They've gone 3 days with no water, and then they show up at God's direction, and the water in front of them is bitter. So, as usual, it drove the people to murmuring against Moses, and as usual, it sent Moses to be praying to God. Both of them had a little different direction on how they were, a little different aspect on how they dealt with some of the things in their life. But we also have to allow them the courtesy, if you will, that, you know, the scripture doesn't say anything at all about the previous 3 days. That there's no talk about them complaining in those intervening 3 days. How many of us would have done any better? Would we have gone 3 days without any, to go 3 days without any water out in a desert? That had to be tough. They did not. There's at least no record of them murmuring during that time. But when they get to this, waters of Marah, that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back there. That was it. Okay, they're going to start complaining now. And it's, you know, it's kind of easy for us to sing when everything's happy and there's a lot of joy. But let trial follow trial and see how soon those praises die away and are replaced by moaning and groaning and griping. So we've got the Song of Moses, which, you know, they were singing on the back, on the banks of the Red Sea. That would have probably been a strange sound coming from the parched throats of the Israelites after 3 days in the wilderness. with no water. That feeling of victory is not easily kept up when the body is tired, when the wells that we looked for relief turns out to be bitter. Our attitude can change fairly quickly. So we take Mara as an example. An example of what? Well, life's disappointments. We all experience at different times disappointments in our life. They're sprinkled with, you know, our life is sprinkled with disappointments at different times and in different ways. Hard in some cases, and even doubly bitter when they come on the back of other trials. You know, when you make it through one and then you find out, oh, there's another one right in front of us. Maybe when projects that we start, they fail. Expectations that we have aren't quite met. And most of all, when God himself seems to desert us and gives no answers to our prayer. The waters that we are given can sometimes seem bitter to us. Now, when you go through scriptures, there's a few examples of bitter experiences. You don't need to turn there, but you're familiar with Ruth chapter 1. Ruth, this is her quote in verse 20, or her words, "Do not call me Naomi, but call me Mara." That's the same word that we're looking at in Exodus 15. She says, "Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." And by the way, that word Mara means bitter. All right, that's what it means in the Hebrew. Now, sometimes that only, you know, well, there's another one. Sometimes our relationships, you know, that we have in this world, our friendships, possessions, social positions, they might be sweet today and then end up being bitter tomorrow. So sometimes our life experiences changes from day to day. It can grow bitter. So as I mentioned earlier, the great life that Israel had when they first went down to Egypt, they were made bitter in the years that followed under their bondage. So God dwelt bitterly with Naomi. She lost her husband, lost her sons, reduced her to poverty. And then we've got Hannah, Samuel's mother, had no child, and it says her rival would provoke her bitterly to irritate her. And that's in 1 Samuel chapter 1. Job, it says he was embittered by his afflictions. Mordecai, when the decree went out against his nation, it says that with a loud and bitter cry. All right? So bitter waters are all around us. We can each cite examples in our lives as well, in our own hearts, in society. Provoked when we look at the news, what's happening around the world and in the United States today, we are certainly surrounded by sin all around us. There is not very much good news in the world. We've got envy, we've got strife, we've got jealousy. There is no scarcity of Mara experiences in our lives. And many are many wells that we look to for refreshment end up being bitter. So what is God's purpose in allowing Israel to suffer the trials here and taking them to Mara? So and we don't ask why God took them on this particular route. He could have taken them on many routes, but we might better ask why he took them for this particular reason, okay, leading them this way. Because like I mentioned before, it was in his power to supply them. He did it, he will do it a little bit later in their history, getting water from a rock. So he could have provided them water at any time. But he was going to allow them to suffer the hardships that they had for a very specific reason. We may get a hint of that in the New Testament when we listen to Paul's response when he had the thorn in the flesh. He says, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. So, and then a second hint is drawn in verse 25 of Exodus 15. He says, and there he tested them. So this is the reason why he's taken them to these waters. And so we don't really know what unbelief, you know, what rebellion, what impatience they had, or what we have in our hearts. If we've got some of those things in our hearts, until that trial comes to draw it out, we might not even be aware of that it's there. But God knows it's there. And so that trial comes up so that it can bubble up and so that we can see it and God can say, you know, see it, okay? And then it's up to us to deal with it. So, but what we see here in the experience, that this bitter is changed into sweet. In verse 25, Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. So, kind of take a look and observe what the method is used here. The tree probably had some particular property in itself, because God doesn't generally supersede, you know, rules of nature. He uses the things in nature to fulfill what his desire is. So there was something in the tree. We don't know what it is, and it's not really important what it is, because it's the spiritual meaning here that we really want to take a look at. God intended for the healing of these bitter waters to be a sign for Israel, a proof of his ability and his willingness to be able to heal. You know, to heal them on their natural as well as their spiritual plane. We see that in verses 25 and 26. See, the lesson that God would have them to learn in this incident here was that Jehovah is a healer. That he is a healer. And so because his divine character doesn't change from, you know, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, if he was a healer back then, he is a healer today. Jehovah doesn't change. God sweetens or heals the bitter waters of life. So how? How does he do that? Well, he does that by altering the outward conditions in one way, okay? By removing sickness, maybe, sending help in poverty, taking away the cause of bitterness, whatever that may be. So in the Old Testament times, how did he heal Naomi? He healed her by the marriage of Ruth to Boaz. Hannah was given a son. Joab, he had his health restored and his prosperity, actually not just restored, but doubled. So the tree here is whatever method God uses to accomplish his purpose. And this is the divine part, the imparting the sweetness into the trial itself. He makes that which is bitter sweet to us by adding himself. So what do we mean by that? The divine change, okay, in our experience is done by a simple secret, not really, I mean, it's a secret, you know, as far as how God does it, but as simple as casting a tree into the waters. This is simply the denying of our own will and taking on God's instead. What did Christ say? Not my will, but thine be done. Paul had a similar experience as I had read a little bit earlier. when he recognized that it was God's will, it's like, okay. Well, that's half, you're halfway, you know, to, you know, to being made whole again, if you will. Call it, if you will, taking up the cross. The spirit of taking up the cross, which is the sweetening, that tree, okay, that heals. So it's important to bear in mind that our trial, our grief, whatever it may be, half of that pain is really, that leaves the moment that we embrace God's will in it, when we understand why it is. You know, when that difficulty in our life is revealed to us, isn't it at that point, and we recognize it, not acknowledge it, aren't we there halfway to where we need to be? We still have to fix it, but God has revealed to us what it is that we need to take care of. So God sweetens or heals the bitter waters of life. So by removing the cause of all evil and bitterness, sin itself. How does this tree here, and we're going to get to that right now, the gospel goes to the very root of the matter, the very origin of the bitterness. You know, from this point of view, it's not difficult to see the shadow between this tree cast in to sweeten the bitter waters and the cross. In Galatians 3, verses 13 and 14, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law, having become a curse for us. For it is written, cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree. In order that in Christ Jesus the blessing of Abraham might come to the Gentiles, so that we would receive the promise of the Spirit through faith. And then to be the second part of that, in Revelation 22, is in verse 1 through 3, it says, then he showed me a river of the water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street, on either side of the river, was the tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. There will no longer be any curse. So that curse that Jesus took for us on that tree, when it is cast into the waters, is what heals the sin that would have prevented us from entering heaven. So Christ, through what he accomplished on that cross, the cross being that object of our faith, if you will, by the sweetening of the waters. So the improvement that is gained through our Mara experiences, to kind of move back a little bit, should we accept them, is really, it's the motive of obedience to God. Okay, understand that God is the one that heals us. It's enough of a reason for us to be able to trust him, to obey him, to love him. And then following this healing of the bitter waters, what does God say in verse 25 of Exodus? He says, he made for them a statute and a regulation. It says, if they would prove obedient, he would put none of the diseases on them that he put on the Egyptians. And he said, for I am the Lord, your healer. So he is that healer for us. And it's a pledge. This sweetening of the waters, it's a revelation that Jehovah is a healer for us. He would restore them to health. The physical healing that we see in the New Testament, the miracles of Christ, are really a symbol of spiritual healing and a pledge that he will do that. It's interesting to look at in the Gospels, the phrase to be saved and to be made whole, to be saved, to be made whole, they're represented by the same Greek word. To be saved and to be made whole is the same word. So when he made someone whole, it's a pledge that he would heal them, that he's talking about saving them. And then lastly, we want to come to Elam, verse 27. There are Elam spots, places of cool shade, abundant waters, rest, refreshment for all of us along our path in our life. And in the times of the hottest persecution, there are intervals of relief after that. So what we have to understand is we might go through those trials, we will go through those trials, but afterwards there is an Elam spot for us, a time of refreshing. God does provide for us. So what is it that we went through this morning? First off, we wanted to compare the songs that were sang on the shores of the Red Sea in Exodus 15. Compare that to Revelation 15 and the song of the delivered after we've been delivered from our ultimate foe, and that would be Satan and his fallen angels. And then secondly, the sweetening of the bitter waters, the Mara experiences for us in our lives. We all will go through them. And then finally, the comfort and the appreciation for the Elam spots in our lives that follow the difficult times. There's places of the cool shade, the refreshing waters, and the refreshment that comes from making it through safely. So there are a lot of things for us to look forward to, not necessarily looking forward to the trials and temptations, but they are there for a reason. They're there for our good. But recognize that God is not going to do, he's not going to punish us just for the sake of punishment. It is to bring out, to reveal what it is that we need to work on. We work on those things and get past those, and then there will be Elam spots after that. So, let's stand and we will be dismissed in prayer.